live from the heart of Lincoln, America.
Welcome to Ticket Weeknights
on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
On a ridiculously cold Lincoln, Nebraska night, we're going to have a special edition for you. DP, Harrison Arns running the board. We got the legend with us. The Sartor Haven text line, 402-464-5685. If you want to be a part of what we're doing, send a WhatsApp. Put your comments, your questions in the chat, and we'll get to it. You can follow us on all the streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, and Allo, channel 961. So if you want to be a part, and if you want to get fancy, jump on over to Amazon Prime, because they, you know, they like us too. So that's what we're going to do. But let me bring him in, because some of the best conversations come from authentic, wise people, people who actually care about the things that come out of their mouth. And not everybody does. Not everybody really, you know, we miss some stuff along the way, but he is the director of player support and outreach, the University of Nebraska. He is the legend, Coach Ron Brown. Coach, thank you for doing this tonight.
Oh, it's an honor, DP. Honored to be on with you. Man, you a night bird.
I am.
That's my bedtime, man.
But this was the thing that we said, you know, you and I were talking and we said, okay, if we want to do this, when can we do it? And based on schedules and otherwise, this was the time we could do it. Yeah. And so we figured, you know, we'll do tonight and then we'll do Saturday morning. We'll just chop it up. And here's the thing about great conversations. And that's the kind of radio I really enjoy doing, is conversational radio. Mm. I don't have to get into hot takes or current news or any of that stuff. That sometimes just in this thing that is sports and education and life teaches us constantly.
Mm-hmm.
There's constantly, and the wisest people are people who are open to lessons, right? Being able to capture lessons in the moment. And you and I were talking the other day, and I was sharing some news that there were some folks that asked me to capture the lessons that I've learned in the lifetime as a coach.
Mm.
And that's humbling to have somebody ask your opinion on it.
Yeah.
But then you and I were having that conversation, and I said, man, if I really want to share the lessons of a coach, the things that we learn over the course of our lives, whether it be on the field, away from the field, or otherwise, that's the real good stuff. And that's the stuff that happens. So I'll ask you this first thing, that if I asked you to say the thing that you learned first that lets you know and believe that coaching was in your heart. When did you know, or when, you know what? For me, it was a player. It was a young man that asked me, "Hey, DP, can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to be good at this. Can you help me?" And there was a feeling, like, and it was palpable, the reaction that I'll help you. Mm-hmm. And there are some questions that came from that, but for you, When did that thing happen? What was the lesson? What was the fork in the road?
Well, let me say this. I want to get to that.
Okay.
But I'll start with this, that as I look back at it all now, after, you know, 40 plus years of coaching, I would say one of the blessed things that I've had the privilege of is to be in a good seat. It's nothing like having a good seat. You know what I'm saying? Where you can watch over the years and observe and take notes and take mental notes and written notes and put it all together. And sometimes you have to act retroactively. Sometimes I have to look back now, you know, now that I'm 40 years into it, looking back on it now, I can give you a better answer.
Yeah.
And my better answer is, I would say it really hit me. You know, I had to get talked into coaching. But it really hit me when I was coaching here in 1987. Coach Osborne hired me from my alma mater, Brown University, and I felt like I was in way over my head. I was by far the youngest coach. I had just turned 30, and back then that was very young to be starting, particularly at a veteran place like this. Man, I had some veteran guys, and I just felt like I didn't know anything. Plus, I was going to be coaching positions that I'd never coached before. I was a defensive player throughout my life, and I was coaching defensive backs in the Ivy League. Then Coach Osborne hires me to coach the receivers, the wide receivers, the tight ends, and the wingbacks. And I'm like, what in the world? I'm way in over my head. But it really hit me, DP, when we had a player named Richard Bell. And Richard Bell was a kid from Altadena, Pasadena.
One of the Dinas in California, yeah, Southern California, right?
Rough area.
Yeah.
And Richard really had a tough start in life. And in fact, somebody very important in his life, somebody in the educational system, told him, you'll never graduate, man. You're too dumb. And you know what, man, you're a good athlete, but you know, you're probably not going to graduate. And that particular person told some of our coaches that. So here I was now getting ready to coach Richard. And Richard came to me when I first got here, and he said, Coach Brown, he said, I need help. I said, Coach, Rich, we're going to have meetings. He said, no, Coach, I need help with school. I really don't know phonics. I don't know how to sound out words. I don't know very many words. I don't have much of a vocabulary. And he said, Coach, can you help me? And I thought, what? I thought I was coaching football. But see, here's the deal. I got together with Richard every night. We went through the dictionary. And we took an A word one night, and then it was a B word the next night. And we got together after every practice at night, after dinner, and we sat down and we just went through words. And you know what, DP? That was a humbling thing for me. It probably was humbling for him, but it was the most perfect thing that I could have been asked to do at that time, to really help me understand. Who is a coach? What is a coach?
And who you were going to be in it.
Absolutely.
You were going to be in it. I try to explain to people that the lessons of coaching happen in such a full, ridiculous volume, right? And at a speed of its own. And I made a choice in my high school career that we kept running into those situations where the Richards were there, these schools, and they would whisper to you, hey, Coach, there is such a huge responsibility for that moment, to handle it right and to have the right person in place. I'm applauding every kid that went to you, that got to you, but I'm afraid for all the kids that didn't. Right? That all the kids who didn't have a Ron Brown to whisper to. And we a part of the book I was going to write, it's those in the corner moments. Mm-hmm. Hey, Coach, can I talk to you?
Yeah.
Because right after that, either some magic happens or some real witchcraft, depending on where, right? That the magic happens when there's a good person in the corner. That's not always the case. And we miss that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And often as being the good coach, you have to correct the pain and aches and hurts and holes in the soul of something somebody else, some other adult caused.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I would say this, the real exciting part for me, initially was, well, Richard went on to get his diploma. Richard went on to be a mid-round draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a fifth-string wingback when I first got here. He ended up starting in a year, and he ended up being drafted in the NFL and playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers for a couple to a few years. He is on the Los Angeles Police Department for the last number of years. He had a wonderful family, great Christian kid. His son played for the University of Colorado. You know what? You look back at all of that. But honestly, DP, I think the real thing that I'm most excited about for him is that he was counted out. He was dead, and there was like a resurrection for him. I was just one of the instruments that God used to help. But the reality of it was is that that kid took off. In fact, not only that, here's the thing I was most proud of him about. And this is where, and I'm going way back to the basics of coaching, because we're thinking about, well, I got to be a guru here. I got to do this. I got to accomplish this. I've won all these awards. No, it is in the, it's greatness is made in empty stadiums. It's only revealed in a full stadium. And Richard Bell was willing to go to the empty stadium and to learn all those things. And you know what he would do at every – I gave a test to all the receivers on Thursday before every game. Richard insisted, Coach, would you let me pass out the paper and pencils? And, you know, we didn't have all this technology.
Right.
Now. But he's like, I want to be the guy doing that. You know what? That introduction to coaching at Nebraska football for me was the humility that I needed. I needed that, I think, more than Richard did, honestly.
We always do as coaches. Mm. We always – like, listen, you know, you mentioned Coach Osborne and his work, his vision, he and Auntie Osborne's vision for teammates and, mm-hmm. you know, the mentoring and that he went into his own backyard to pull people – to do this thing, and all of it is, well, can you do this for these kids? Not realizing that every single teammate mentor gets as much from it or more mm-hmm. than the young people that they're in charge of,
yeah.
right? That they're sitting there across the table from. I can speak to that, but it led me to ask, to be curious. Walk me through the first conversation with Coach Osborne about you becoming a coach on his staff, because that's got to be mind-blowing. Hey, wait a minute. You know, the phone rings, and it's Tom Osborne.
Yeah. Well, it was crazy because I'm coaching at Brown University, and I'm the rookie coach at Brown, and my head coach is ripping me a new one every single day. Nothing's good enough, and I just thought the guy hated me, and yet he kept me on for a couple years there. And then when Coach Osborne evidently called one day. I was sick in bed. I was down in Arkansas recruiting for Brown University, trying to get some Ivy League kids out of Arkansas.
Hello.
Hey. And I'm laying in bed, and our head coach from Brown calls me, and he says, hey, by the way, Tom Osborne called for you today. I said, who? What? I said, you're talking about that famous head coach at Nebraska called for me?
That dude.
The guy you always yelling at that can do nothing right? And he said, yeah, he said he wanted to see if you would be a candidate for the receiver job. But I told him you were not. You're a defensive back coach. You're too young. You're too sensitive. And you're just not ready for that yet. And that was the end of that. So I said, you know what? I'm going to call Coach Osborne myself. So I called up the office here at the University of Nebraska from that little town I was in Arkansas, laying in bed in a hotel, sick. And I said, could I get Coach Osborne on the phone? And Marilyn Winiger, who was his secretary, said, sure, we'll put Coach Osborne on. And Coach Osborne got on the phone with me. He said, yeah. He says, I've heard about you, Ron. And he said, I was thinking about you might be interested in this job. I said, Coach, I'm very interested. I sent a resume that day, and they brought me in for an interview. So I was here for a portion of the day, and Coach Osborne took me back to the airport, and he said, well, we'll let you know here in probably in a few days. So I'm down there and now in Tennessee recruiting for Brown University, and I get to a payphone. He says, why don't you call me when you get a chance? And so I called him, and he said, well, Ron, he said, I think I'd like to possibly, you know, hire you. But he says, we got another guy named Turner Gill who played for me. He said, and Turner was a great quarterback here. And I said, yeah, I know who he is. And I said to myself, hey, no way I'm getting this job. He said, but Turner wants to play in the, you know, he's playing Canadian League football and baseball, and he's doing some things. So give me the weekend and we'll figure it out. So I said, nah, I got no chance. So I waited, called him up on a Sunday that same weekend, and he said, well, Ron, he said, you know, Turner wants to give baseball another whirl here. And he says, if you'd like, he said, I'd sure like to hire you as the receivers coach. I don't think you heard from me for a minute because I just dropped the phone. anyhow, you offered me a job, and that was very exciting. But when I got here, the moment I got here, he said he took my wife. Nancy took my wife, and they went off somewhere. And he said, "We're getting in a private airplane, and we're going down to Louisiana." He said, "We got to go see a guy named Mickey Joseph, and we got to go see Reggie Cooper, and all these guys that had eventually come here." And on that private plane that I was with him, I asked him. I said, "Coach Osborne, why in the world did you hire me?" I said, "My coach gave you a horrible recommendation. He told me that he said I wasn't ready for it, that I was too sensitive, and coach on the other side of the ball. Why in the world did you hire me?" He said, "Well, Ron," he said, "that was such a bad recommendation. I figured the guy must really like you and didn't want to lose you. So I figured you must have been pretty good."
You know, as it happens, right? But and in those situations, you kind of use it as fuel, right? That, okay, this I need to make this guy regret how he treated me. Right? Like, I'm good enough for Tom Brown, for Coach Osborne and the Huskers. Hey, you have a good time back there in the Ivy League. I want to ask you about that, because the recruiting that happens at a program like Nebraska, especially in the 80s, 90s, et cetera, versus the Ivy League, it's a different world.
It is, but I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I was best prepared for when I got here. Recruiting. Man, I'm going to tell you what. In the Ivy League, we had to recruit all over the country. We had to do all the grade checking and the, you know, and we didn't have athletic scholarships to give.
Right.
So we had to work out financial aid packages, and I had to hustle all over the country. I was so well prepared to recruit when I got here. Recruiting was actually a lot easier. You had scholarships. You were in the hunt with great players, and I didn't have as big of a region. You know,
you also didn't have recruiting for Nebraska is recruiting in the Pacific Ocean. It's fishing in the Pacific Ocean. Listen, you can be specialized. The Ivy League requires a whole different thing because, one, no scholarship. Mm-hmm. Two, all the things that were going on, especially in that age. Yeah. And then finally, people that can qualify academically to get into those schools and not fail.
Yeah.
Right? And then to be able to play the kind of football that's going to be played in the Ivy League. Right. I would imagine that the recruiting process, at least the weeding out process, is different.
It was different. You heard no a lot. And you didn't hear no from the kid in the Ivy League. You heard no from the admissions director. You know what I'm saying?
Like, nope.
It was like, nope, he ain't. Hey, but he's fifth in his class. That's all right. We've got. So, you know, that was the hard part. But when I got here, I was really ready because I had a work ethic. I had a high work ethic. And that really served me well here in the recruiting area for a number of years.
It's funny because as you say that, I would think that most people who are familiar with you would put that on the high list of things for Coach Ron Brown. the work ethic. You may be the most disciplined coach at a Power Four school football program that I've ever been around. That is a huge thing. Rashawn, the other day when you came in, he was joking that, well, Coach Brown hasn't changed his diet in forever, right? And we understand that. Like, I can look at you and go, yeah, that's probably a statement of truth. So, first of all, I'm going to ask you to pull back the curtain of Coach Ron Brown. What is the diet? Because, listen, you have the fountain of youth in full. So, help us mere mortals who are trying to figure out how we're going to go through this. What is the Ron Brown diet? What keeps this thing working for you?
Well, I used to be a sloppy eater growing up. And I came from a home where we didn't think about all those things. My folks weren't really well educated and didn't know, you know, this, that, and the other about all the different food types. So we didn't think about it much, but actually this is how friction turns into traction. Mm-hmm. I'm normally I have lean muscle mass and not, you know, some people just have different body types.
Yeah.
I was always pretty lean, but, when I got here, it probably was within a number several years. We got a health checkups. All the assistant coaches got free health checks and physicals. Mm-hmm. And I got a call the next day and they said, Mr. Brown, you have a major problem with your heart and your arteries, and we need you to get down here real fast. So I went down. I said, what? I feel great. I've never had any issues like this. And they discovered that I had some, a bunch of junk in my heart and high cholesterol. And they said, you're a candidate for a major heart surgery unless you change some things. So that's where the friction turned into traction. I mean, I'd always worked out a lot, 6 days a week, take one day a week off, work out hard, still do. But that's when I started to really change, and I got away from a lot of saturated fats introduced more fruits and greens and all the good stuff. And I stayed away from the fat stuff and a lot of carbs. So that's how I eat now. And I've continued to do that for the last 30 something years.
It shows, and it isn't, it lands, right? It matters. And I would think that with the young people that are in your charge and under your watch, that it is important to have a coach who mimics the things that he's asking of them. Hmm. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you know, I do believe that, DP. And I know it's not easy, particularly as you get older. I'm 68 years old now, and some of those habits are hard. But, you know, I had a great – my dad was one of the most disciplined men I've ever seen. Now, not so much in what he ate and what he drank and all that, but with work. I mean, we had very little money. He refused to go on welfare. He took five jobs on at one time. And he just worked and worked and worked so that we could pay bills and do normal things that families would do to support us. And I saw all that discipline. I saw the hard work. That man was not opposed to hard work. And I think that's really that got all over me. And it's always hit me that, you know what, I'm going to outwork you. In recruiting, I'm not going to let that assistant coach for that school outwork me. I mean, I remember I was recruiting Mike Brown one time out of Arizona, and Mike had 100 scholarship offers. And it came down to us and maybe Florida, USC, and his dad was living in Florida. He was living in Arizona. And the rules say that if you're going to visit mom or somebody in your family and the kid, you get one day a week, you'd have to do it all in the same day.
It's Labor Day weekend, and you deserve a treat. Like 25% off all your Liquid IV favorites and podcast-exclusive gifts with purchase during Liquid IV's Labor Day sale happening now. Just go to liquidiv.com and use code LIVPODS at checkout. There's never been a better time to stock up on all your favorite hydration. From sugar-free flavors like raspberry lemonade to the fan-favorite hydration multiplier, cotton candy, and more. This is a limited-time offer, so stock up before it ends. Just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing, on-the-go hydration. So don't miss out on stocking up on all your favorites. Tare, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and use code LIVPODS at checkout to get 25% off site-wide, plus exclusive gifts with purchase. That's code LIVPODS at liquidiv.com.
He said, and I realized nobody had visited his dad out there, and that was really important to him. So I went to his school, like it was on a Thursday morning, his school in Arizona, in Phoenix, and I hopped a plane and flew all the way to Tallahassee, Florida, where his dad did. And I mean, I was wore out. But I got to dad by 10 o'clock that night, and I got to see both. And no other school was willing to do that. And Mike Brown told me at the end, he said, Coach, you're the only one willing to go see my dad.
I, you know,
honestly,
yeah. I there's so many, and I got it from the other side. You were, you would have players who were being recruited, and they asked you, "Hey, coach, what do I need to look for? Like, do you mind being in the room? Do you mind being on the call?" And all of those things come into play. What I'd like to do, we'll take a break. When we come back, coach, I need to ask you about the rules of recruiting, because for you, 40 years of all over this country, different position groups, different styles of play, right? We've gone from the run game, run-centric, to the spread, to all sorts of things, and there are certain things that fall into play. And so I want to ask you the rules, the most important things when you go into a house, into those situations, those things that come to play, and the character things that you're looking for, because the five-star system recruits will tell you some things, but they may not tell you all the things that you want to know. So we'll talk about that with Coach Brown on The Ticket. We'll be right back.
Back to The Ticket Weeknights on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Appreciate you hanging out with us on a Wednesday night. And I know that you'll probably hear this in a replay at some point throughout the course of the week, because it is the legend Ron Brown, coach, is with us and breaking it down for us. You mentioned recruiting, and Harrison and I have had this conversation with some of my coaching buddies from around the country, and I am always amazed that we fall so much in love with the physical side that we miss the other stuff, mm-hmm. right? That, and depending on the program and the coach, we all recruit a certain kind of way. So I'll ask you, do you recruit to people who are similar to you in your makeup and your work ethic, or do you recruit to the system?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm gonna use an example.
Okay.
Years ago, we had a kid here who played for us named Tyrone Leggett.
Okay.
Tyrone was a kid out of Columbia, South Carolina, who was the maybe 100-meter champion in South Carolina. I remember Danny Ford and Joe Morrison. Danny Ford was the head coach at Clemson. Joe Morrison was the head coach at South Carolina back then in the 80s. And they didn't offer him. And so I was talking, Frank Solich and I were both looking at this kid, Tyrone Leggett, and we were thinking, man, this kid, he could be a receiver, could be a running back, he could be a DB, but we liked him. And we didn't do, you know, the old-fashioned Notre Dame thing where we were, you know, just going off of hearsay and so forth. We really watched kids. We watched every play. We didn't just watch a highlight tape. We watched all the little things that he did. And that's how thorough we wanted to be. Well, anyhow, we went to Coach Osmond. We said, we like Tyrone Leggett. He goes, well, who else is recruiting him? Is South Carolina recruiting him? Clemson recruiting him? No, well, no, Coach. It's just us and, you know, like Furman. He goes, what? He says, why? Something must be wrong, guys, because not recruiting him. But here's the part I love about Coach Osmond. Coach Osmond said, well, go check it out. So I went down there, and I went over to universities. I talked to those two head coaches, mm-hmm. Danny Ford and the head coach at South Carolina, Joe Morrison. And I said, how come you guys aren't recruiting Tyrone Leggett? This guy's a 100-meter champion in South Carolina, which has got a lot of speed.
Mm-hmm.
And what's wrong with this kid? They said, he's kind of small. He's a little skinny. But, you know, honestly, DP, he had broad shoulders. And he was tapered down. He was lean. Mm-hmm. But you could see in our weight program, we could put some meat on that kid. And if he maintains, in fact, increases his speed, he'll be special. Well, anyhow, it came down to signing date. And we're still debating. And the kid really likes us because nobody else is really recruiting him. And so we said, Coach Osmond, can we go with this? And he goes, well. And he goes, yeah, okay, you guys go for it. And we did. We ended up signing the kid. Yeah. It was just us and Furman. And that kid ended up playing as a true freshman. He went on to have three great years and was a third-round draft pick with the New Orleans Saints and played a number of years in the NFL. And you know what? I just look back on that and say, so the answer to the question is whether it's my – He fits me or mm-hmm. he fits our system. Mm-hmm. Do we do a thorough job in looking at a player and being able to kind of sense his maximum potential. And can we look past all the other ratings and how everybody else views him? And do we have our own eyes for a kid? Do we have we developed our own systematic eyes to see, now that's a kid who could be really good for us? And Tyrone Leggett clearly was that guy.
It's always interesting that to become a coach, you have to you use a word that I love, which is friction. And the friction turns a player into a coach who either coaches the way that he wanted to be coached or the way that he hopes nobody else is ever coached, right? Like I'm not going to coach the way I was coached. That wasn't good for me. So I'm going to become a coach and I'm going to correct some things. Or, you know what? That was the ideal. Which way works for you?
Well, honestly, DP, the only thing that I knew, and I was teaming with Frank Solich in this, who was very much like me, and maybe you can call us old school, whatever it was, but we weren't going to go off of a highlight tape, and we were not going to go off of hype. We were going to look at all the little things he did. We watched 10 games of his senior year. Now, that's almost unheard of now because kids are getting offered after their freshman year. But we waited all the way to the kid's senior year, and we watched 10 games, full games, and we watched every single play, sides of the ball.
Every snap.
Everything. We found out everything about him, exactly his times, this, that, and the other. And we went down there, looked at him, and it was a business decision. I mean, I can say we were thorough about that. It could have been a bust. It wasn't. I look back on it, and I say, thank God we had men in our program that were willing in those, because we weren't getting a lot of five-star guys and all that. We had to get the two-star guy that was going to be a four-star guy before he left. Mm-hmm. And we had to see him developing and growing. And that's what I really appreciated in the recruiting process.
I would imagine that in the space that technology advances some things. But sometimes technology is a disadvantage because you can get comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know what? Because more players have access to you as a coach because of social media, email, et cetera, they know how to find you now. Like, it's all over the internet. They know how to get to Coach Brown at Nebraska. But it also means, and the same for high school coaches, parents, they know how to get to you. But the flooding of it seems like it would get in the way of you being focused on your quality. You know what you're looking for. But now the traffic is, you've taken O Street and now you turn it into I-80 and you've got to pick a luxury car speeding by now instead of, oh, there's only 10 cars for me to look at. I can give them more. How do you handle technology and the fact that so many people want the eyes of Coach Ron Brown at the same time?
Well, I just don't think technology can replace human eyes. I just don't think so. And I think sometimes we start comparing all that. Hopefully it can enhance it. It can enhance and speed up the process or add more to the process. You know, oh, there's more games we can get and at such and such a time. But you still, you know, the eyes for it and meeting the young man and sitting down with his folks and making calls and being thorough that way, that's all. I mean, there's just nothing like the hard work of it. And I tell you, I always had the attitude that, like, during 9-11, right after 9-11, everybody was afraid to go up in an airplane. And so I'm recruiting Isaiah Flewellen from Germany, of all places. It came down to us in Maryland. And Maryland refused to get in the plane and go over to Germany to see him. I not only went over. Now, here I am. Now, DP, this is not a good time of that part of the world,
right,
and that
right.
time era
right.
for a brown man with a bald head to be walking around airports in Europe.
How about that?
I got stopped every 500
how about,
feet, man.
How about that? What are you doing? Yeah, what are you, you doing? Know what, I'm saying? What are you doing?
Man, oh, man. But I went over three times. I went over three times to get that kid, And I'm not trying to brag. I'm just simply saying, I'm trying to prove the point, because there have been times I've been outworked. Not very many. And I always said to myself, I don't ever want that to happen again.
Right.
But I had a fury inside of me that said, Marilyn, you ain't outworking me. You too chicken to get into an airplane to go get that kid. And I told her, folks, you shouldn't go there. If that's all they think of your boy, look it, I brought old Frank Solich over there with me, who was the head coach at the time. And Frank, those narrow stairways they got in Germany.
Yeah.
He went, he comes down the stairs and all the way down, broke his ankle. He broke his ankle on the official visit. So here we are flying back from Munich to Chicago, and his ankle's going, whoa, 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 on that plane. His ankle was about 2 feet thick when he got off that
airplane. The kid
has
to sign now. Like, oh, man. Like, he has to sign.
Let me tell you.
Like, I gave you my ankle. Like, I that has to happen. Here's what we coach. So grab this next one right there off the next mic stand. That one's plugged in. You don't have to worry about it. It happens all the time. And, like, I would imagine, like, calling that kid on the phone and going, hey, listen, Coach Solich broke his ankle to come visit you. I think you're a Husker now. Like, I think you're legitimately a Husker now.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Yeah, like, you have to be a Husker.
That... I think the broken ankle sealed the deal.
you know, it would be a thing. I am with Coach Ron Brown. And it, through all of it, right, that I would imagine also that the competitive nature of high-level coaches, there's some competition in recruiting between the groups that – quite frankly, hey, listen, you know, D-line's having a really good run. The running back room's having a really good run. The receivers are doing well. Hey, the linebackers need to pick it up a little bit. How much of that conversation do you recruit across the board now? Does it matter what group they are or what region of the country? Because, as you said, different parts of the country, different parts of the world, different cultures require a different touch.
Well, you know, I'll just talk about back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that was really important to us is that of all, you know, we'd go all over the place, and because, you know, our population base in Nebraska has never just been great. So you have to, you don't have a lot of people. So you got to go a lot of places and look. But you always had an incredible affinity with the people in the greater 500-mile radius. And that's always been the case. And a lot of schools that have done really well have had that mentality. And I remember back in the day, Coach Osborne, the most nervous time for us was on signing date.
Yeah.
Because he went down the list and he looked, this guy's in a 500-mile radius. He didn't sign with us. Why? Who's got that area? Why didn't he sign with us? And we better know. We better know. Well, Coach, we had him in. Mom and Dad were here and they just didn't like it, you know? We're good with that. But if we didn't know much about the kid, That's when it was a lot of tension.
where on the pecking list of priority? Because I would imagine, and I know that it varies depending on the young man, but coach versus parents, right? That sometimes you're recruiting the coach.
Oh, the high school coach. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There were a number of high school coaches that were very involved in recruiting. There were some that weren't. There were some that just really were kind of hands off, but. You know, I wanted to visit with the high school coach. I wanted to talk to that high school coach and not necessarily recruit him or sell him, but at least get just the facts, sir. I mean, I wanted to know what made the kid, what made his heart tick and why this, why not that, you know, all of that. And I think just doing a lot of that groundwork and diving deep, it really comes down to work ethic. I mean, it really does. I'm not saying it's the only thing in recruiting, but if you leave that part out and if you're just going by all of the natural stuff, you know, the natural smile and the award-winning phrases in the home and so forth, you know, I think you can come up short. That there is a grit and a grind that's involved with it. And then the ability to recover fast. You can't sit around. I mean, there were times when I lost recruits and I was like, down, man. I was like, dang, I blew it. Dang. I mean, I'm just muttering to myself, listen, while I'm doing all that, I need to get on to the next kid. I mean, we got to move
the
on.
The Arns family's waiting for you, right? You got to get it through the I'll ask you this thing when we come back from break, because I think a big part of it from the high school coach aspect was trust. The word that usually moved the needle to who they were going to choose, who these athletes were going to choose, was who do I trust? And it often bounced back because the recruiting coach, Ron Brown, comes to a house in Houston, Texas. He's going to hear from the high school coach, the parents. He's going to hear from other players. And then he's going to trust what he saw on tape. Or does he trust the visit? The visit more than what he saw on tape? And that's the question I'm going to have for you. What's priority one? What's the thing that helps you decide more than anything else? The thing that you trust most when it comes to recruiting. It's an amazing thing hearing it from Coach Ron Brown. We'll be right back here on The Ticket.
Back to The Ticket weeknights on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Final segment. It's always interesting. And again, I probably should preface all of these conversations with Coach Brown in that we go down the rabbit hole and we're never going to get to all the questions that I have for him. Each conversation will be a different conversation that just kind of follows some of the wisdom and knowledge and experience. Because for me to sit in front of Ron Brown and not ask him about some of the things and how things work, for listeners, because there are families out there whose kids are going to be recruited and they don't know what the process is and they don't know what the coaches are thinking. But I do know that the word trust is important. In both directions, right? That the player has to trust the coach and the staff and the city and the community and all those things. The parents have to trust the coach and all those things. The coach has to trust what he sees or what he knows. Mm-hmm. And those are pivotal moments. Those are important moments in the recruiting process and then in life. But you were telling the story about recruiting one of our own. And I think it's a fantastic story because, you know, it makes sense that this is kind of what happens, but things tend to work out. We were talking about Jay Foreman.
Yeah. I mean, I went up to recruit Jay out of Eden Prairie in Minnesota. And I remember the day I went up, and it was a snowy, rough day. I mean, they canceled all the schools in Minnesota. And, of course, that probably happens half the winter is up there. But
yeah, I'd imagine.
But, anyhow, Jay was home, and I was, you know, I had grown up watching Chuck Foreman play in the NFL. He was like one of my guys. I mean, I was a running back in high school, and I was Chuck Foreman.
Loaf
you know
of
what
bread,
I mean?
One hand, spin cycle. You spin doctor this dude? Yeah, man.
So I'm going to visit Chuck Foreman here, and we're going after Jay. And Jay was really a good player. He was a very versatile kid. One of the reasons I was interested in him, because I thought maybe he could be a wing back, a kind of an H-back type guy on offense, but or a linebacker. But he was a good athlete. He was a really bright guy. Very, very – he's very athletic, and he was very bright. Real smart football player. So I'm up there, and I'm thinking, okay, got a shot at this. And so I'm talking to Jay. It's just me and Jay in the home there talking for a while. And then Dad comes home. And I go up to him, and I said, oh, Mr. Foreman, I've been wanting to meet you, by the way. He said, Coach Brown, he said, you need to leave right now. So what? He said, my boy's not going to Nebraska. And I had to make a real tough business decision.
Right.
Within my mind.
Right.
And in a matter of seconds, because I couldn't go humma, you know, very long.
Right.
I just said to myself, I'm not leaving. I'm not, you know what? I'm gonna battle this dad. I'm going to battle Mr. Chuck Foreman for his own son. That's what I think of Jay Foreman.
Yeah.
And I just wanted him to hear me out. And so we had to talk a lot of things through. But at the end of the day, we left on good terms. And Jay, of course, came to visit. And it worked out for Jay to come here to the University of Nebraska. And every time I saw Chuck Foreman come to the football games, he came and watched Jay play a lot of times. He would see me, we'd bear hug each other, and it was a far cry from that initial deal. But you know what? I think what happens, DP, is you know, these parents, they can read you just like we coaches think we can read parents. You know what I mean? They're looking for something that's authentic, that's real, and not flaky. You know, I've always felt like it's important not to tell a kid what he wants to hear, but tell him what he has to hear to be the very best he can be. And I think moms and dads and the kid himself will trust a man of integrity. You know, integrity means that you're one. You know, like the way you think, what you say, what you do, and who you are all one. You can't divide. It means it's one as a whole number, which cannot be divided. That's where the word comes from, integrity. It's integer. Mm-hmm. And so if you're an integer as a coach, or you're an integer as a player, or an integer as a parent, you can't be divided. You're not talking out of two sides of your mouth. You're not a chameleon changing colors every time it's more popular to be something else. Mm-hmm. And so as a coach, you don't go in there saying, well, I promise you're going to play next year, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. I mean, I think it's really good to go into a home and say, you know, I'm just really watching the film. You really need to work on your change of direction. Your pad level's got to improve. And this is where we think we can really help you, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I would much rather trust that than somebody telling me that I'm great. And you know what? I'm thinking, I wonder if he's telling that to the next guy he's going to see too, you know? So I think it's really important to be honest. If something is really good, tell him it's really good. If something's not so good, say it's not so good, but here's where we can help.
Have a plan.
Yeah.
Have a legitimate, authentic plan. Legend, it is always a great hour. It's a great hour. We're going to do it again Saturday morning. So, but in the meanwhile, Coach, thank you for sharing knowledge, spreading wisdom, and love. Because this is all good stuff around the way. Harrison Orange, thank you, kind sir, for taking us through on the mothership. We're going to go get warm. That's what we're going to do. And then we'll do this thing again tomorrow morning, starting at 6 a.m. with early break. Jake Sipple, Coach Bill Bush on 93.7 The Ticket.
Send summer out with a sizzle during the Omaha Steaks Labor Day Sale. Save 50% site-wide on legendary steaks, juicy air-chilled chicken, beefy burgers, deli-style franks, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code FALLFLAVOR when you shop omahasteaks.com today. Fall isn't just the unofficial end of summer. It's the beginning of fall grilling season. From Labor Day cookouts to game day greatness, Omaha Steaks delivers the kind of fall flavor that brings people together. USDA certified tender steaks, legendary burgers, amazing appetizers, and cozy comfort meals for those busy weeknights. And every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop now to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the Labor Day sale at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code FALLFLAVOR at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code FALLFLAVOR. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.